Hi, my name is Lynette Denise Bates. I'm 47 years old. Today's date is March 28, 2010. We're located in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I'm interviewing my brother.
I'm the brother, Lornell Bates, Jr., 51. This is March the 28th, 2010. We're in New Orleans, Louisiana, and that's my big sister sitting across from me.
Thank you, dear. I'm excited about today because I believe that we indeed do have a story to tell. We've come from a wonderful family, and I think that it's important that we tell our story because we have a rich heritage. So I'm honored to have you interview me as I interview you on today. So I'm going to start with the first question. Is that okay?
Let's go.
And the first one is going to be pretty easy. It's who has been the most important person in your life? And tell me a little bit about that person. I know that there's several, but I only want to hear about one.
Oh, but I can't travel down that road. To narrow my life down to one individual would not do justice to all the ones that have had an influence in my life. So my parents would be first Lola Tate Bates and Lornell Bates Sr. Both have had a great influence on my life. I learned service and unselfishness early from my mother. Her service not only through the church, but to other relatives in the family. And later in life, I saw the service side from my father. Whenever you needed something, he was there, he was on time, and he came ready to help. So those two would have a great influence on me. Brother Martin and Becky Martin are two others that have had a great influence on my life.
And that would be Herbert Martin and Rebecca Martin?
Yes.
Great.
That is correct. And I would say Dr. Klemmer and his wife had a great influence on my life. Those are... three couples, I would say, stand at the top of the list. But there are many others, Aunt Bobby and...
That's Bobby Jean Tate.
and Uncle
I'll
Linus
just help
Tate.
You out with the
Thank
full
you.
Names.
Thank
that's,
you very
if
much.
That's okay with you.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
Okay.
Had a great influence on my life.
And in terms of... the influence that those individuals have had on your life outside of daddy and mom. You shared the service opportunities for growth there. In terms of Herbert and Rebecca Martin, what values did you receive from them?
The spiritual side of my life, seeing his true dedication and seeing the service also through him, I would say yes. The spiritual side of my life, strong influence came from them.
Okay. And you also mentioned Mr. Clemens, whose first name I do not recall at this point.
I believe he's Dr. John Klemmer.
Okay.
I can't remember his first name at this time either.
And what special gifts did he leave with you?
Making the neighborhood, it was a mixed neighborhood, and the Klemmers are a white Jewish family, and they made me very welcome in their life and in their home, and that I got a chance to experience, and that influenced me to do or pattern myself along the same manner as the way that they treated me.
And you say, you indicated that he was Caucasian Jewish.
Yes.
And I guess we need to say that you are an African-American male, so that's important.
Yes.
That relationship was established back in the late 60s, early 70s, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
In terms of our neighborhood here in New Orleans.
Early 60s.
Early
60s. Early 60s. Early
60s.
So let's have the question asked. To the person that asked me. what or who are the biggest influences in your life?
Well, I would have to say our parents, of course, Lola and Lornell Bates as well. Mama had a unique way of loving individuals unconditionally. And she was indeed that person in the neighborhood that a lot of people looked up to. She treated everyone equally, whether they were rich or poor, socially equipped or not. And oftentimes when I wasn't ready to receive individuals that Mama would allow to come into our home, she politely reminded me that we were no better than the individuals that she was allowing to come in, because I can recall her allowing the local person that remained in the corner grocery store for hours drinking beer after she would get off from work. And she needed to use the restroom one day, and Mama let her come into the house to use the restroom. And I'm like, what you doing? Letting that, you know, lady come into the house. And even though I was in elementary school, I was like, we don't do this. And she reminded us of the fact that we do allow others to enter into our home, because if there is a need that we can provide a resource for that person, then it's our duty as Christian individuals to meet the need of those who are hurting. So definitely Mama. And then Daddy, because Daddy, Lornell Bates Sr., because late in life, as I struggled through illnesses with female problems or with the breast cancer, he was always there.
He was there.
Not only being there in terms of physically wiping away my tears, but each time he shared wonderful stories of our family members with us as he nurtured me back to life. And for me, it's also Brother Morton and Rebecca Morton, because they taught me that living for Jesus was indeed a life that would be true, and that I would always have to strive to please God in all that I did. And believe it or not, our little sister, Dianthea Michelle Bates, has also been a large influence in my life. She's been that one person who has always loved me unconditionally. She knows a lot of my hidden secrets that others don't know. And even though she's younger than I am, she's so much wiser than I am. And she has taught me about the importance of learning in life when it comes to relationships with a male, that everybody plays games, no matter how old they are, including me, and that when it comes to a loving relationship, you've got to decide whether or not you like the rules that the other person has. And if you like the rules, go ahead and play ball. And if you don't, get out of the ball field.
That applies not only to love, but to everyday life. If you don't like the rules, you find some rules that you can, or you make your own rules. And then someone will have to learn to play by yours.
Right. So as we look at rules in life, what do you see as one of the important values that you've taken from our family life and brought to your family life with Angela, your wife, and your son, Jordan?
I would have to say being a family would be the example that I saw. And there was good and bad in that example, not only for our immediate family, but the other families that come into our lives. It was the family side, the husband and the wife and the children, and everybody doing their best to make sure that the family survived.
Well, you know, I can indeed say that when I look at you and your family, you are indeed an ideal couple and an ideal family. You have your struggles. You don't always get along, but you decide that you're going to disagree but still love one another and respect one another. And I admire the fact that you take the time to spend quality time with your family. I'm always tickled pink when I call and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And you're like, oh, we're headed to the North Shore. We're going to make groceries. Or for those of you who are in the outside of the greater New Orleans area, that's you're going to buy groceries. Here in New Orleans, we make groceries.
We make groceries. We're going to shop for groceries everywhere else.
I think that it's really neat that you guys shop for groceries as a family.
You mean all families don't?
You know all families don't. It's usually the man or the woman going to the grocery store. But I think that's really neat that you guys take that time out to not only purchase the food, but during post-Katrina, Hurricane Katrina, when I came to live with you guys for a couple of weeks, and I watched how you guys lovingly delegated out household tasks. It was nothing for your son to get into the kitchen or go into the kitchen to prepare salads. And I watched how you would go off to work. Your wife, Anne, would go off to work. Jordan would go off to school. But when you all returned home, everyone made sure that everyone had their needs met. When you would come in late at night, Anne had prepared dinner for you. She made sure that she was up and the dinner was waiting for you, in a sense. And I was like, man, we didn't get that when we were small, but I saw how you move beyond what we knew as children in terms of what a loving couple would do for one another. And you went one notch up and said, this is what I know, but I can improve upon what I know. So I think that's really neat, the way you guys love one another. But I know it ain't perfect. But you still love one another. And that's life. We're not perfect.
There's no perfection here on earth. Yeah. But we do the best. Yeah. We do the best that we can. What is your fondest memory or memories in life so far?
Wow. Okay. My fondest memories are the times when we as a family, Mom, Dad, Michelle, you and I, would travel across the United States in the 60s and the 70s as an African-American family to cities such as Houston, Dallas, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and all of those places, and Florida. And I can remember as an elementary school student in the, what was it, the late 60s, early 70s, watching our parents buy property in Florida.
Mm-hmm. That was
now,
strange.
To this day, it's still property in Florida that nothing's sitting on, but we own property in Florida.
Yeah. And from that one trip to Florida.
Yeah, and so the exposure that our parents gave to us early on in life, I see that I take great pride in exposing the high school students that I work with to opportunities outside of the city of New Orleans. We travel to Houston, to Dallas, to Florida, to Chicago and Washington, D.C. And each time that we travel, it amazes me how many students haven't traveled outside of the city when, even though we were low-income individuals, our parents sacrificed so that we would have that exposure. And now my life is centered around serving low-income individuals who would hopefully be the first to graduate from college in their families. I'm exposing them to colleges and universities outside of the greater New Orleans area. And I was reminded of that love or that passion that I have in that area. Just yesterday, we took about our University of New Orleans Upward Bound program. We took, I think it was 32 students down to Violet, Louisiana, which is about 45 minutes outside of New Orleans, to service a plantation. Now, get this, African-American high school students going to service a plantation. I see the expression on your face. And they, too, had the same expression, like, why are we going to a plantation, Miss Bates? We black. You know what black folks did on a plantation? And I said, yes. But when we arrived and the plantation representative shared with the students the fact that the plantation, this small plantation in Violet, Louisiana, was no longer a plantation, and it was in the process of being turned over into a community service center so that the individuals of that parish would be able to invite in local representatives or state representatives to have places for people to come and to hang out and to party and to fellowship and to meet and greet one another. We were now giving back to a place that perhaps once was seen as dark and ugly. We were now providing a greater light to that place. So that's why we were there, okay, to turn history around.
A second life for the plantation.
Yes. New life.
Yes.
A more rewarding life for the plantation.
I participated in some of your travels with your students, and if no one has said, and I'm quite sure several people have, you have done an excellent job when it comes to exposing them to opportunities outside the city. Katrina came along and became an equalizer, and whether you wanted to or not, the majority of the people had to leave here that probably would have been born and died here. They were forced to leave and see how other communities are doing and how you can live and survive outside of the city that we love so much. So you do a wonderful job when it comes to that.
Thank you, dear. It's because of my parents.
Yes, I do. I can remember the guy's name, Mr. Ted, the waiter that took care of us when we were there and made us a part of his family.
There in Florida.
Yes, there in Florida, Mr. Back. Ted. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You have a good memory.
I remember that. That was a very fun trip.
Yeah. So I've got a question in terms of just family life in general. You have one son.
Yes.
Jordan.
Jordan David Bates.
David Bates. What feelings did you have when you saw him for the very first time?
It was amazement. When the doctor placed him in my arms, I looked at his lips. I looked at his ears. I looked at his eyes. I looked at his fingers. I looked at his toes. And I had to raise my hand because I was saying, this one's mine. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. His features are so similar to mine.
Yeah, he looks just like you. That was the scary part. When I saw him for the first time, I was like, man, wow, he looks like you. He looks like Larnell.
He looks like me. Funny story, we were having donuts, or went to buy some donuts at Dornak's, and the cashier looked at Jordan, and she looked at me, and she looked at Jordan, and she looked at me, and I could see her eyes going back and forth between the two. And I asked her what was wrong. She said, he looks just like you. I said, he does? I never really noticed. So that was comical. Well, how old is he? He's 14. He's going to be taller than you are. I said, yes, he will be taller than I am. I think last summer he grew 2 to 3 inches, and he's only 14 now, so he has four more years of growing probably. So, yes, I had to raise my hand. This one is mine. I claim this one.
So. But you can proudly claim him because not only does he look like you physically, but he has a heart just like yours.
Thank you. He's
a very compassionate young man, an avid reader, and whether I've told you this or not, he calls me every Saturday, and a lot of times I really don't have anything to say. He doesn't have anything to say, but he religiously calls every Saturday just to see what I'm up to, how I'm doing, and I can recall when I had my last chemo treatment, and the two of you came to sit with me during the treatment. It meant a lot to me to watch him sit patiently doing that hour to 2 hour period as I went through the chemo session. And although he would struggle with what should he say to me, I could just see all of the love and compassion in his eyes. And I just wanted to thank you for allowing him to go through that difficult period with me.
I'm happy that we were able to be there for you. And I must say that he was patient without a video game, and he was patient without a telephone. I think that day we had a book, and he sat and he read his book. So I really enjoy having a son. I really do. And he is, I am extremely happy with the way that he's growing up.
So tell me, how has he surprised you?
He surprised me because I see myself in him. I think there was a saying at one time, been there and done that. Mm-hmm. What you're trying to do, or the game you're trying to play, or the game you're trying to run, I've already done that. I've already played that game. And I see that in him. I see the things that I did that he is learning and he's doing. So I have to caution him every now and then. That's not the way to go. You're going to hear this and you're going to repeat the words later in life to someone else that I've already learned that lesson. If you'll listen to me and learn from my mistakes, you won't have to take the same path and suffer the same bumps and bruises that I did. But it's something that everyone has to learn on their own, and some of us will, just like I did, some of us will take the advice of people that have been there before us and avoid the challenges that life will bring, and some of us will choose not to follow and not to listen and take the challenges on.
So did you always follow what your parents told you to do?
Not at all. Thank you. Not at all. So I like I said, I see what they went through because I'm going through that now. And he will find out later in life also with his kids or with others that he can mentor that, yes, we can talk, yes, they can listen or somewhat listen, but the final decision will be theirs as to whether or not they will take that advice and move forward or take the hard road.
Well, I can honestly say that both you and our sister Michelle have done a great job in terms of raising your children. Our sister Michelle has two children, Brianna McCastle and Julian McCastle, and she has a wonderful husband by the name of Arthur McCastle. And they, too, are great parents. So I think we've really been blessed as individuals to have such a great family. We've had some struggles in life, but overall our life has really been great. It's been awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think we've had great families around us to give us a great example. So ones that we were related to and ones that have been neighbors to us and ones that have come through life as we journey through life. So we've had good teachers, very good teachers.
Yes. So speaking of teachers, and this time I do want only one, one person answer. What?
I cannot.
Who? No.
I can, but I will not.
Excuse me?
I will not.
Well, I won't ask that question then.
Okay, well, let's move to the next question then.
No, I'm going back to the question. I'll acquiesce. Would you give me the names? Notice how I changed from name to names.
Thank you.
Share with me the names of teachers who have been influential in your life.
I would say the first one that I can remember at Agnes L. Boldwheat in New Orleans. I can't remember the teacher's first name, but His last name was Mac.
Mm-hmm. And can't help you on that one.
In our little grade school across the street from our house, Mr. Mac, an African-American grade school teacher, during that time where we had quite a few, and we've gone through a period of time in education where African-Americans in the classroom have dwindled to very low numbers, and they're starting to climb up again. But Mr. Mack was a disciplinarian, and we tried our best to play and do whatever we wanted to, but he set the rules, and he was a very good example. Didn't appreciate the example at that time because I wanted to do other things. But now that I look back, a very, very good influence in my life. After that, I would say Mr. Pigeot, an art teacher that we had at McMain, who later became an administrator in the school system. Very good example. Mrs. Gray. Very good disciplinarian. Didn't appreciate
great
it.
Great typist.
Oh, yes. I don't want to see those fingers flying, she would say. I remember those words. Mrs. Simmons, a very fun teacher. And at times when you got out of line, a very strong disciplinarian. But I would say that her style of teaching was one that was, for me, a softer side of teaching that drew me and made me more interested in learning. But when we got out of line, the softness turned and you got the disciplinary side of her. And you found out that she wasn't playing. Let's do this correct. Let's do it right the first time and let's move on.
Well, I followed you at Eleanor McMain Secondary High School, and I think your name is Larnell.
Larnell is correct.
And I'm 4 years behind you, and you graduated, and I entered the year after you graduated. And I think my name is Lynette, but my first year at McMain, my name was Linnell. Until finally, and you know, I was very shy back then. I began to correct them and said, no, my name is Lynette. Oh, we thought it was Linnell because, you know, your brother Larnell. So, you know, I've always followed you. But because you were such a great person, I had these big shoes to fill. And I think I filled them by now. But anyway, I want to talk to you about Simmons.
Okay.
Ruby Simmons.
Yes.
She was one of your favorite teachers.
Yes.
And she also was one of my favorite teachers. And I graduated in, what, 80, and today it's 2010, and Ruby Simmons and I are still together. She walked me through my chemo. She took me to every chemo session that I had. She's been there for me, and, you know, she is my second mom, particularly since our mom is now deceased. She passed because of her struggle with cancer, but she was a real trooper, our mom. In that Lola Bates was diagnosed, given 6 months to live.
And she fought it.
Very spiritual person, trusted God, and went in and out of remission for about a 3-year period. And finally, the cancer was stronger than her body. But the great thing during that difficult time with caring for mom was, even though my professional life was real busy, our sister who lived out of town, her life was not as busy, and her husband, Arthur, was very understanding when I had to leave town for professional reasons. Our sister Michelle would come in town and help you to
yes.
care for Mama, and during Mom's latter days, as you know, the hospice individuals assisted us with caring for Mama at home, and when the care at home became too great, one of my fondest memories that I have in terms of taking care of Mama was the day that you, Michelle, and I decided that the care for Mama was too great for us to handle at home.
I remember that day.
And you took on the role of sharing with Mama the thought that we would have to place her in hospice. And I can remember You're going into her bedroom, and I could see you from down the hall, and both you, Mama was leaning out of the bed, and mm-hmm. you were leaning into the bed, and both of your heads were touching, your foreheads were touching. And that was just a beautiful picture for me, because I could see that you were both in agreement, and she was okay with us releasing her to hospice, which that was her decision to go. We just didn't want her to be there. And when you came out and we asked, well, what did she say? And you said, she said, okay. And she was more okay with it than us, because after releasing her to hospice on that particular occasion, that next early morning period is when she released her spirit and went on to heaven.
Yes.
And
I do remember that.
I never thought, you know, I don't like looking at dead bodies, but when I ran back to the hospice facility, well, first of all, I was a little angry because, you know, it was about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yes.
And our aunt was with us, Aunt Snowball. I can't think of her first name right now because I'm a little nervous. Well, when I woke her up to tell her that Mama was passing, you know, she went in the bathroom and started brushing her teeth. I was like, hey, Snowball, my mama is dying. Get out of the bathroom. We got to get to the hospice. But anyway, when we got there, Mama had already expired. And it was nothing for me to go up to her and kiss her and just say, bye, baby girl. And that was the first time that I've ever been comfortable around a dead body. Very first time.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, very first time.
But I've had a chance to think, and it looks like the biggest influences from teachers have been the ones that established a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking back, and I would have to add Coach Markham and Mrs. Markham mm-hmm. to that list. I can remember in gym class, he would have us doing military drills. And I hated it, because everybody else was out playing football, basketball, all of the recreational type sports. And we would be in the building doing military drills, left face, right face, march. And I couldn't wait to get out of his class. And little did I know, leaving his class, I didn't know at the time, but his wife also taught. And I was a student in her class. And she was strict with the discipline, just like he was. But looking back at those instructors, those teachers, are the ones that I love the most, because I can draw back on what they taught me at that time and use it to go forward in my life. So I really appreciate those teachers now. I really do.
Great. So discipline is important for you.
Yes. It's a solid foundation. It's once you have the discipline, you can stray away from it, but you have a foundation to come back to. And if you don't have it, you're completely lost.
Okay. Well, I'd like to somewhat move away from perhaps the traditional type questions that are perhaps brought to the table during these particular sessions, and I have perhaps a strange question at this time, and that question is, what animal best describes your life? Yeah, I see the look.
I've never really thought about that.
Well, think about it.
You're going to spring that question on me at this time, where it's going to take a lot longer than the 3 seconds I can see you're going to allow me. Give me another question. Let me think about that one a while. That was a question.
What two animals best describe your life?
Since we're on the animal track, I think we better make it up to 4 or 5. Maybe I can buy some time here.
And then you're probably inquiring, well, what or why that question? Well, because I enjoy watching National Geographic. And if you look at their episodes and watch the animal kingdom, they really behave just as we do as humans, if you look very closely at them.
Or is it the other way around?
I don't know.
See?
I'm not wise enough to know, and I don't want to think about it. Have I told you I've had chemo in my system, so some things I just can't handle in my brain?
Okay, I'm going to buy that one from you, but don't use that too many times as an excuse.
I know, everybody
okay?
keeps telling me, yes. it's 2 years out. You can't use it anymore. I'm going to work it.
I like the question. I don't have a response at this time.
Okay.
I don't. I'll send you an email.
Okay, thank you.
I'll send you an email.
Question?
Sure.
You've mentioned discipline a lot as something that has been a foundation for you. And to return to something that the two of you were just talking about, it occurs to me that it would take incredible discipline emotionally and intellectually to have had the conversation that you had with your mother about hospice. And I'm wondering, what did you say to her when you had that conversation?
It was not a lot of talking. It was, let me give you a little bit more information. My mother gave me an example of preparing for death and eternal life. The best example that I could probably have on the planet. She took matters into her own hands. She paid for the entire funeral process. She made sure that all of the decisions were made. She made her own decisions. She made sure that it was paid for. She
stared death in the face, and although she was angry, she fought back as long as she could.
Yes, she wanted more time to enjoy retirement and her first grandchild. Yes, and grandchildren to come after that. But being prepared, getting yourself ready spiritually, getting yourself ready financially, getting your family ready for the event that you know is going to change their lives. I truly appreciate what she did. And I took it upon myself to champion the cause and spread the word to other family members. We came here and someone else paid for it. When we leave here, that's our financial obligation. So we should prepare and have things the way that we want, so that the decision process is already made, and when the family members are grieving, they don't have to take that responsibility and make decisions at that time. You know what you want when you leave here. You know what type of funeral you would like to have. Pay for it and make the decisions. And if anything is going to change, that would be on someone else. But the foundation is laid because you have made the decisions. And the only thing they have to do is follow the plan that's been laid out. So I love the fact that my mother did that. And I wish other families had the opportunity to experience death and the continuing of the family after a loved one is gone with that process instead of what do we do next.
So in other words, prearranged funeral,
get your attorney, get your will, have all of that settled while you can make the decision and someone else does not have to make the decision under distress. So.
Well, this has been awesome. We've learned a few new things about one another, and I truly, truly thank you for this opportunity to sit down and share our life story with others. I love you a whole bunch, and you've always been a wise person. Continue to grow in wisdom, and may God's peace forever be with you.
Thank you for this opportunity. I was surprised when you called, a little bit hesitant. You tried to prepare me for it, but once again, I made the decision not to prepare myself. But I believe it's come out pretty, came out pretty good.
Great job.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about family and my son and my wife. One of the main reasons why my son has done so well is because she has put a lot of time. She's been very dedicated and put forth tremendous effort in raising a very, very, very fine son. So I do appreciate that a whole lot. I thank you for this opportunity to talk with you and to tell others about a small snapshot of our lives. So love you very much, too.
Love you back.
Thank you.